at the end of his administration, and certainly what Pete Wilson faced at the beginning of his, because the economy is slowing enough that you can't use year-over-year revenue growth to handle growth in spending.
In other words, there have to be cuts that will reduce spending every year, new revenues through something akin to a tax increase, or worst-case scenario, both. For the California Report, I'm John Myers in Sacramento.
Budget planning is already underway for California's public university systems. This week, Cal State trustees and UC Regents have been meeting to discuss the next fiscal year. No student fee hikes to report, and for the UC system, no salary hike for chancellors either. A controversial proposal to boost their pay by 33% over the next 4 years has been postponed to January. The latest housing market numbers for Southern California are out, and the picture is not pretty. The report from real estate trend watcher DataQuick finds year-over-year sales and prices are down for six counties. Home price drops ranged from 15% in Riverside to just 3.8% in Los Angeles. About a month after those awful wildfires, life in San Diego County is largely back to normal. For most people. Not for those who lost their homes, or worse, got burned. Kenny Goldberg reports from KPBS in San Diego.
When the wildfires first broke out a few weeks ago, staff at UC San Diego's Regional Burn Center had a feeling they'd be busy soon. They were right.
This patient here, he was a civilian that was unfortunately caught in the fires. He has pretty severe burns to his face and his arms. This patient here was caught in the brush fire as he was attempting to cross the border, I think, and he had a very severe inhalation injury for which he's on a respirator right now, also developing pneumonia.
Catherine Ridgway is a physician's assistant. We're standing in the burn center's intensive care unit. Each one of these patients has been badly burned, and they're comatose. Ridgway says they'll be here for a while.
Well, for a skin burn, like a cutaneous burn, you average 1 day per percentage of burn. So let's say they have a 50% of their body burn, they will average 50 days here. However, if you add a lung injury to that, it could prolong it months.
Eventually, these patients will need to take an active role in their own recovery. Right now, they're completely immobilized.
You're lying on a bed. You can see only what's above your head. The ceiling, for example, I can't tell you how many times I counted the little dots on the ceiling trying to keep myself busy. But it's very scary.
Allison Roach was savagely burned in 2004 when the Paradise Fire swept through thousands of acres of North San Diego County. She was overcome by flames as she tried to leave her home. Her sister died in the fire. Roach suffered second and third degree burns to 85% of her body. Roach spent the first part of her recovery in the UCSD burn unit.
The only time I really remember experiencing any severe amount of pain in the beginning was when I was initially burned.
Janine Dubina is the nurse manager in the burn center's ICU. She says there's a reason Roach doesn't remember more.
When they're severely burned and in this, we put them actually in a chemical coma so that we can provide the care that we need to do with minimal psychological strain or physical strain.
Dubina says that care includes changing their bandages twice a day.
We remove all the dressings, which can be uncomfortable, and then we actually look at the burn sites, try to remove any dead tissue, and we provide a topical cream or ointment to the skin, and then we rewrap it.
There's another treatment that's often performed daily. Dr. Colleen Chanik sticks a long tube with a light on it down a burn patient's throat.
In the burn patients, we've been using it because there are a lot of them have inhalation injuries, and they've been on the ventilator for a while, and they're paralyzed, not able to cough up secretions, so we use the bronchoscope to go down to the airway, see the secretions, and actually remove them and help open up parts of the lung.
In time, these patients will have numerous skin grafts. They'll probably also have multiple reconstructive procedures, including plastic surgery. Eventually, they'll have vocational and physical rehab, too. Allison Roach says recovering from burn injuries is actually tougher psychologically than physically.
You know, the pain goes away after a little while, but you have to deal with getting up in the morning and looking at yourself in the mirror and saying, this is my new face, or looking at your hands and saying, this is my new hands or my new body. And that's difficult to deal with.
For now, in the intensive care unit, burn patients are fighting just to stay alive. All told, 20 people who were burned in last month's wildfires were treated at UCSD. Two burn patients have died. Some are still in critical condition. 9 people have already been released. For the California Report, I'm Kenny Goldberg in San Diego.
That's the California Report for Thursday, November 15th, the production of KQED Public Radio. I'm Rachel Miro. This is the California Report.
Funds for the California Report are provided by the California Endowment, working to ensure that Californians get statewide health reform this year. Online at cahealthreformnow.org. And the James Irvine Foundation, expanding opportunity for the people of California and supporting the California Report since its premiere in 1995.
The preceding portion of the California Report has been brought to you by Real Goods at the Solar Living Center in Hopland. This is KZYX 90.7 FM Philo, KZYZ 91.5 FM Willits in Ukiah, 88.1 FM Fort Bragg, and also streaming on the live web at kzyx.org. Mendocino County Public Broadcasting, listener-supported community radio. It's 6:59 and 15 seconds, and we're getting ready for Education Now. Education Now is being brought to you tonight by you, our members. So let's get going.
Are on the road must have a code that you can live by, and so become yourself, because the past is just a goodbye. Teach your children well, their father's hell did slowly go by, and feed them on your dreams, the one they picked, the one you know by. Don't you ever ask them why, if they told you you would cry, so just look at them and sigh.
Well, welcome to Education Now. I'm Thena Melville, your host, and tonight on Education Now, we're going to be discussing testing, who benefits, and what is the history. What is the difference between the power of positive thinking and denial? Head Start, what have we learned? Academically hurried or emotionally hurried, is there an important distinction to be made? Class size and learning, what do we know? What are some of the causes for the rise in learning disability among children today? And also, recommended reading for children of all ages. That's a lot to cover, and I've got a lot of information to share. And I do want you to call in, and so at some point, why, we'll open the lines, and we'll just see how far we can go. So welcome to Education Now. First, let's start with a case about testing. Now, you know, in researching the case, testing, I ran across an article called The Case Against Standardized Testing, Raising the Scores, Ruining the Schools. And here's a quote, and this is from the Association for Childhood Education International. quote, "The more we learn about standardized testing, particularly in its high-stakes incarnation, the more likely we are to be appalled. And the more we are appalled, the more indeed we will be to do what is necessary to protect our children from the monster in the schools." So you can look that up on the web if you want, and I'll give you some more information from them. I thought the tests and their uses. While many of the pre-kindergarten tests are of the paper-pencil variety and have a more individual performance-oriented quality, for measuring physical development, children are asked to skip or stand on one foot for 20 seconds. On the cognitive level, they are asked, for example, to retell a story in its proper sequence. With regard to social and environmental experience, they are asked to count 10, recognize colors and shapes, manipulate a crayon or pencil, and follow directions. The results of these screening activities are often the basis for cautioning parents to wait another year before starting your child in kindergarten. They are also used as a means of early identification of individuals who, as the preschool screeners say, might be expected to have difficulty in school and might need special assistance, essentially an early process of labeling. Although scant evidence exists that such early screening is beneficial for either children or schools, it has nonetheless become almost universal. Now, I know that there are a lot of different tests, and for instance, there's the SAT, which is a test that students take usually in high school if they're college-bound. The SAT, although it wasn't called the SAT when it was originally formulated, was formulated to keep blacks out of the military. Then it was used to get into college, which of course left out many people and lots of women as well. The ACT is a little better, and now the SAT does have a writing component. It didn't used to have a writing component, an essay. It was all just, you know, fill in the box or check the appropriate answer. The ACT was always a better test because there was writing involved, of course, but it wasn't used as much. It is being used more these days, but not in the traditional schools. It's still slow coming. Then there was a test that called the CTBS, which is the California Test of Basic Skills. I'd used that test, and it was much superior to the tests, the standardized tests that they're using now, because if you wanted to use it for an assessment, you know, you could give a child a more challenging test and things like that, which that was the original idea of testing was, oh, we're going to use them to assess the children so that we can help them along. But you see, that's not what they're using them for. They're using them across the board to label and sort out children according to some, what I would say, what standards? I mean, the standards are so minimal. And what they call standards in today's No Child Left Behind tests is laughable. Then there was the Stanford-Binet, which was used before 81, and before Sputnik went up, when we decided we needed to be, you know, compete with Russia, then we quit using the Stanford-Binet. The Stanford-Binet was a really a very good test for, I mean, as tests go, and they would use it to identify a child as gifted. Now, I don't know that that was such a good idea either, but at least it was a test that was challenging and gave you some feedback on the child that was useful. It wasn't used to put children through sit at tables and do these steps over and over and over again. And what's happening today is that these children are, you know, sit down in rows and they do the same activity over and over again until the teacher feels they've mastered it, and then they move on to something else. So the teacher can't really teach the students what they're asking, follow the child, what they want to learn. the teacher is always preparing for the test. Now, I'm not saying that all teachers do that. There are amazingly gifted teachers out there who are managing to do a lot more than that, but I bet they have tenure. And because it's very difficult, in my estimation, to really follow the child in an open environment and see what that child is interested in and watch them blossom. It's, in my estimation, what these tests do is nothing except make children think that life is a game where you just answer the right question, like Jeopardy. And of course, you know and I know that that's not what life is about, and that's not was not the original intention of education. Why do we educate? We educate to meet the dream of a democracy. The dream of a democracy is the dream of self-rule. And I ask you, how do these tests foster this dream? How do these tests foster this dream for self-rule? And I don't think that you're going to find how that could possibly work. Here's another quote from the Association for Childhood Education International. Given the pressures of the past two decades, however, the tests in the majority of school districts have expanded in their purposes. For example, how well individual children score determines whether they will be placed in a gifted and talented program or become eligible for special tutoring. The results of annual achievement testing also determine eligibility for a variety of enrichment programs, special classes, foreign language instruction, and the like. The tests also determine a student's academic level. They become the basis for early tracking and the ongoing tracking, reflecting the belief that homogeneous achievement groups facilitate more efficient and effective teaching and learning. That such grouping on the basis of a test leads mostly to inequity has not been sufficiently considered. And in recent years, test results have been used increasingly to determine whether a child should advance from one grade to another. This represents a new dimension. Oh, so there aren't very many experts in the field who feel that this is relevant and a good thing for children. And yet somehow we're doing it. Somehow it's happening. We're going to take a little bit of music break here. Let you think about that. This is from Chris Williamson's Lumiere.
Where they were seemed to be a room in the interior of some sort of ship. There were banks of blinking lights and the low hum of an engine somewhere.
Where are we?
Said Ted, his hold tightening on Sirius's collar.
We're not on X,
said Glory, moving about the room in a familiar fashion.
We're on board the lightship Terraplane. Listen, I have to go and report in. If there's anything you want to know, just punch the red button on that console, and anyone will answer all your questions.
Wait, said Ted anxiously. I don't understand.
Come here, and I'll show you,
said Glory, beckoning him over to a nearby console. Her eyes held amusement as she punched a button and said,
Anyone there?
And a voice from somewhere else said,
Anyone here at the ready?
Please identify this collection of localized light pulses at the ready.
Name, X-ray Ted. X-ray, a communications code word for the letter X. X refers to name of creature's planet, also name of high energy faculty. Faculty X contained in light unit known to creature as heart. Creature is boy being, presently in fledgling protostar stage. Has possibility to extend to population one star, according to luminosity scan. At the ready.
You see,
said Glory.
Want to take a turn?
Ted punched the button, and when the voice said,
At the ready,
Ted asked it to identify Glory.
Glory is a luminous variable star, member of galactic cluster known as Asterplanetes. have traveled for over 16 million light years from home in Clouds of Magellan. She has a sorcery light line connected to her mother, Fata Morgana. Mother terminated when son went Nova. Grandfather Oman, last of the star-telling wizards, presently on board Terraplane, at the ready.
Come on,
said Glory.
Let's go find the others.
You mean I might become a star? Ted asked Glory. Isn't that something, Sirius? He said to his dog, as Snowblink led the way down a softly glowing corridor. I mean, I've always wished on them, but I never thought I could be one.
Aren't there creatures on X that are known as stars?
Ted nodded.
Well, why are they called that?
Glory asked. Because they're so bright, said Ted, hoping he was on the right track.
Exactly,
said Glory, as they reached the end of the passage.
So, you see, we are stars, self-luminous celestial bodies, and everyone has the ability to become one. Unless, of course,
she added,
they prefer to be light traps, like the apex predators of the black hole.
A door slid noiselessly open to reveal the control room. A figure swung round to view them. Ted had never seen a blue man before.
On a jet Strikerman of the ship Terraplane. I have told you my name. Now tell me the same.
Does he always talk in rhyme? Ted whispered to Glory.
He speaks in chant, the language of the master pilots,
said another voice, and an old gray beard of a wizard stepped forward, placing his hand on Glory's shoulder.
Although I have been blinded by the supernova explosion which destroyed our home, I can plainly see my granddaughter has picked you most especially from out of the protogalactic cloud.
If your eyes have been blinded, how then can you see?
If you lost your eyes, my boy, would you not still have vision?
That wasn't exactly what I wanted to play for you, but it's still a very good one. Chris Williamson is so wonderful, and this CD called Lumiere is a science fiction fantasy and has all of the wonderful vocabulary of the universe, protogalactic cloud, and things like that that go with it, and it's wonderful. Well, now let's go to academically hurried or emotionally hurried. Someone called while that music was playing, a teacher, to say right on about the testing, and I hope he'll call in again so you can hear what he has to say. Academically hurried or emotionally hurried, is there a distinction to be made? The standards in No Child Left Behind are so low. Given a chance, children will challenge themselves, provided you follow their interest and offer them an environment where all their senses are engaged and both their large and small motor refinement is not neglected. That means they're allowed to move their large and small muscles. How can you do that if you're constantly sitting? How can you engage all of your senses if you're always just looking at a paper and a pencil? Emotionally hurried, streetwise, adult humor, toys that stress fashion and makeup and sex, and growing up as fast as you can. that's a high value for many people. She grew up so fast, and they're thrilled. Or, he just grew up so fast. He's been on his own for so long. But that isn't, that is really a crushing problem for many children, because they are children being forced into that adult role so soon, into that adult level so soon, and then getting stroked for it by society. And yet we're saying, don't push them too hard. And I know that if you heard David Elkind speaking, he's very concerned about, hurrying children and rushing them along. But what he's concerned about is that we're going to push them into these sitting down and taking these tests and preparing them to take tests from preschool. That's what he's concerned about. Not that we're going to let, he wants us to let them play, to let them experience the world, to construct their world. But the emotional hurrying is very destructive. It's not that children can do algebra, because if you do challenge them, because when they're bored, it's mind numbing, this prep for tests. When you allow them to go on, and you see children as young as 10 engaged in algebra and enjoying it, and people say, you're hurrying them, but no, you're not hurrying them if they're engaged in that. What's hurrying them is emotionally pushing them into who is your girlfriend and who is your boyfriend, and look at those clothes, and look at this and that, and that. Those are the things that are destroying childhood, is the emotional pushing, not the academics. Because if they're really engaged in the academics, if they're really loving it, then they should be able to go as fast as they want. That's not a problem. It's the letting them use a calculator to do math. Once they get at the college level, they can take a calculator into any math class. And yet, in public school, they cannot use a calculator. And then to do real-world math construction, building things, that's construction. That's, reading and speaking. Public speaking is so important, and plays, doing plays and movement, working on real issues. All this is sacrificed, as we call it, a standard. We're dumbing down the population, and we have been dumbing down the population since the 80s. We have been, and I think it's intentional. I really do, because you know that an educated populace is what a democracy needs. But if all you're doing, you're not dealing with democracy, you're not teaching them about self-governance. That's not what's happening. The story of education goes back to when many parents could not read or write, so children were sent to school so that they could better themselves. Now, most parents have not only graduated from high school, they've graduated from college. And yet we treat these parents as if they know nothing. And parents kind of question themselves, and that is curious to me. How can you have a BA and then question whether or not you could teach your child? We must stop getting them to think of life as a game of Jeopardy, where there's no history and there's no living democracy, and the very purpose of education, to take on the demands of citizenship, is lost. Well, there we have it, about the academically hurried or emotionally hurried. And I want to jump into Head Start. What we know is that mandatory preschool is coming, and that David Elkind's concern is real. It's not that he's concerned that we will have preschool for everyone. That's a wonderful thing, as long as it's done in the spirit of the true kindergarten, which we'll go into. So you should be aware when you're looking, if you are, for an environment where the child can construct the beings that they are with creative imagination. The kindergarten gets its name from Froebel's, his original kindergarten model. And there were three objects were games and songs, and the second was construction, and the third he called gifts and occupations, which was to compose and explore in your world. And the philosophy was, 1, free self-activity, 2, creativity, 3, social participation, and 4, motor expression. Now, if all of those things are there in these mandatory preschools, if all of those things are there, games and songs, construction, composing and exploring, free self-activity, creativity, social participation, and motor expression, large and small motor expression, then that's great. But if they aren't... Now, Froebel's believed that what separates humans from other life forms is that we alter our environment. Now, that may be true, but you can't alter your environment much sitting in rows doing one activity after another to increase your test scores. When Joy Turner, my mentor, came to Mendocino County, she delivered a speech on an address on children and the future. This was in about 95 and at Mendocino College. And she was saying, you know, Athena, it doesn't matter whether it's good or bad, whether you think it's a good idea or not a good idea, both parents are going to be working. Both parents are going to be going to school, getting an education, and by choice having children, and by choice choosing not to stay home with those children, choosing to work. And so we need quality care systems for both infants and young children. And I understood that. But what kind of quality, what the quality that we're talking about, when parents, when Head Start first started, they worked with young children, and then they had parents working with their own children. Now, at the end of this test, at the end of this experiment, children in both groups did far better when they started school than children who had not worked on these activities. But one thing that they left out in the literature was that the children who worked with their parents did better throughout school, not just in the lower grades, throughout school, and they did better in life. So that's something to remember, that the preschools should be small. They should be personal. They should engage the whole child, and they should involve the parents. And that's what brings me to class size and learning. Now, it's kind of a no-brainer, in my opinion, to say, does class size really make a difference? Well, the research says that when you go over 17, retention drops by 70%. And yet somehow, that isn't meaningful to people who are setting up classrooms. The fact is that the quality of education and the idea of being a well-rounded individual also went out of fashion. In other words, that a child should know music, that a child should know literature, that a child should have movement and freedom of expression, that a child should be able to speak in front of a large group of people, that a child should be composing poetry, as well as reading great books, as well as dialogue in the classroom, as well as doing plays, and really a well-rounded person out there in the world, not someone that has been honed to do a specific thing. And it's more invasive now than ever when you think that we spend more keeping a person in prison than we spend per pupil in education. Where are our values? What has gone wrong? And why aren't parents and other people involved with children up in arms? The dumbing down of our schools. They're being attacked on all sides. I know that even with the idea that education used to be free, and now we have these student loans, well, an economist, a professor of economy, was saying, well, that's not so bad. He was telling Dr. John, that's not so bad. Look how low the interest rate is. And Dr. John replied, yes, but think about it now. When they get out of school, they have this debt to pay off till they're about 40 years old. Nothing is going back into the economy from them except paying back this debt. But if it was free, and then they got out of school, and they got a job, and they started working, they would be buying homes. They would be buying goods and services. They would be putting back into the community, not back into the banks. Where have we gone wrong? Why is this idea lost? Why? These are all the questions I have to ask. I don't understand, and I really wish that the kids who are paying back these loans would take out a class action suit, because it's so unethical. And what's happened to their generation is that unless they came from very privileged families, they're unable to buy a home. They're unable to contribute to the community because they're working so hard just to pay off this debt. Well, I want to go on now with learning disabilities, and a lot of this comes from Marlene Baron. The increase in learning disabilities or developmental delays. There are delays in large motor. There are delays in vision, learning, and tracking. There are delays in language, the articulating and processing. There are social-emotional delays in self-regulatory issues. Why? Well, a lot of it's toxins in our air, food, and water. Hormones in the milk, which has forced girls as young as 8 years old to start puberty. There are additives in the food. There's fake food, you know, all the fake food. Very little slow cooking going on. Very, very little fresh fruits and vegetables. Very few real eggs, real chicken broth. So food, the food and the water and the air, all which have been contaminated by huge corporations who are not paying the price for it. And then there is some indication that the older egg and the older sperm are creating some of these disabilities. People waiting until they get older to have children, so the egg and the sperm is older. And then a big one is cleanliness. Killing everything, living in a sterile environment, which just is havoc for the immune system, because the immune system has not built up any defenses in a sterile environment. People, children, need good, clean dirt. They need to live in the world, not apart from it. Now, you know, the idea that children need to be exposed, and of course there's the overuse of antibiotics, which is another killer. On the other hand, I want to tell you a story about a soccer field I went to in the South Bay, located in the middle of a waste disposal site. No, that isn't a red tide you're smelling, I told the people I was with. A freeway and three cell phone towers. Now I ask you, what is the cause and the rise of learning disabilities among our youth? And of course, as I said, add to this the overuse of antibiotics and all forms of drugs to control children's behavior. And then there's the real big one, lack of movement. Lack of movement, sitting, 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 it's not safe. We're told to go outside. Children don't climb trees. Children don't walk in the woods. Children don't go fishing. And there's no place to crawl, roll, run, jump, walk freely. They're always in straitjackets, either in car seats or strollers. They're not put down on the ground to crawl, to roll around, to walk. These are detrimental to brain development. No water to wade through, no exploring, no climbing. Everything that builds neural connections is off the table for many children. And so on top of the environmental causes, we have poor prenatal care during delivery for some people, illness in infancy or early childhood, and of course there's always the heredity. And there's a huge rise in autism, which is the ability to empathize is lost for children with autism. And I can't help but wonder if the denial of love or something real, the denial of love as something real in our culture has something to do with it. Children are very sensitive. And of course, there's just the temperament and individual differences. But it's no wonder that there are all these learning disabilities and developmental delays. What chance do the children have with the environment full of toxins that no one's taking responsibility for, with the additives in their food, which no one seems to be taking responsibility for, with all the fake food that they're offered in order for us to have a very speedy life, and with this compulsive cleanliness, this sterile environment, killing, you know, even the good germs. What possibility does their immune system have under these circumstances? Well, before we go on to the power of positive thinking, I'm going to give you another song here, and I'm also going to go ahead and invite you to call in. I think all our tellies are working, and you know the numbers are 895-2448 or 800-499-7117 if you want to talk to us. I have a lot of stuff to cover, but if you're dying to talk, here's someone is dying to talk. Let's take this call before we go to music. Hello?
On to something you said a little earlier when you talked about students getting a full education and taking out student loans and paying them off, and then they would be in a position wherein they would contribute possibly more to society. But as a matter of fact, our corporate entities have become so corrupt in their search for squeezing money out of people, they'd rather have you take out loans that you don't pay back so that they can continue to get more interest. As a matter of fact, I've heard it said that among credit card companies, someone who pays his bill every month on time is considered a deadbeat borrower. It's like the less successful you become, the longer that they can milk you.
That's right.
And it's the essential amoral nature of corporate entities that have achieved a stunning and absolutely, to me, astounding level of rule over what kind of decisions are made on a governmental level. It's like they own Congress, which is one of the reasons that no one's going to support anything to overturn Bush, because he's their boy.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like all people have to rise up.
Thank you.
I stood all I can stand, and I can't stand no more.
Thanks
so much for your show. You bring up issues I find very critical for people to be thinking about in these days.
Well, thank you for your call.
Oh, you bet.
Good night now. Well, that was pleasant. I When I was in college and when my ex-husband was in graduate school, we didn't have any debt when we got finished. It was all free. Can you imagine how wonderful? Then when you get through, then you can actually start building something. And you don't have to. And at that time, since it was free for everyone, you were then competing with those people from incredible means, and I'm sure that they didn't like that either. I remember Ronald Reagan saying when they burned the bank down in Santa Barbara in 67 that these kids just had too much time on their hands. So I guess they fixed that, didn't they? Anyway, let's have a little music. Yeah. Let's see. Here, I'm going to CD number one.
Oh, yeah! Everybody's brother, I wanna be your lifetime friend. Crazy as a rocket, nothing in my pocket, I keep it at the rainbow's end. I never think of money, I think of milk and honey, grinning like a Cheshire cat. I focus on the pleasure, something I can treasure. Can you picture that? Can you picture that?
Add it to the mixture, Aaron is a gotcha now. Really nothing to it, anyone can do it. It's easy and we all know how. Now begins a changing, mental rearranging. Nothing's really where it's at.
Daddy Eiffel Tower's holding up a flower. I gave it to a Texas cat.
Fact is there's nothing out there you can't do. Yeah, even Santa Claus believes. Drummer, be an up and comer. Can you picture that?
Guys, bag it out.
All of us are winning, picking and a grinning. Lordy, but I love to jam.
Jelly belly giggling, dancing and a wiggling. Honey, that's the way I am.
I lost my heart in Texas, Northern Lights of Texas. I keep it underneath my hat. Aurora Borealis, shining down in Dallas. Can you picture that?
Can you picture that? Can you picture?
You gotta see it in your mind.
Can you picture? What's quick and easy to find? Can you picture?
You don't have to buy a frame.
Can you picture? Can you picture that? Can you picture that?
I just felt that was the perfect song before we talked about the power of positive thinking. Can you picture that and visualizing? Well, somebody wants to talk to us and they wanted to be on air, so let's get them here. Hello, you're on the air.
Hi, Athena. This is Robert from out here west of Willits. I'm sure you know which Robert it is.
Yes, I do.
Due to some medical complications, I'm not at rehearsal tonight, so I'm getting to hear your show, and I like what I hear. I just wanted to say I was there when they burned that bank, and I was deeply in the middle of my education. I had not made it through college, although I was at college. I was down there in Isla Vista as an ice cream man, and I was learning all about society from selling ice cream to little kids out of a truck. So I want to make the point that education is education. It's not what the man or the hirer or the military or actually anybody says. It's what you have happened to you, and it's how seriously you take things that you're experiencing during your life. And that's what makes education, and you know that's where you get educated. Is you get stuff from the school, and you get stuff from the library, and you get stuff from the teachers. But some of your teachers might just be little kids that you're selling an ice cream to.
That's right.
I just wanted to just kind of toss that in.
Thank you for your comment.
And thank you for all of your educating. You know, you had your hand in educating my beautiful children.
Well, thank you, Robert.
Thank you. Bye.
Bye now. So, the power of positive thinking. How is it distinct from denial? Well, projection and defensiveness and that constant smile, that will usually tell you that a person's in denial. You know that when people get defensive, when you say something, or when they're always talking with a smile on their face and everything is great. But with denial, there is no change. It may even get worse, and it usually does. But when it's positive thinking, there's growth, and there is change. You know, if there's dis-ease, the word dis-ease, D-I-S-E-ease, not at ease with our environment. And that's where we are a lot, I would say, in terms of Robert's comment, especially with this administration that we have right now. You have to live the life you want to see in the future. That's what positive thinking is all about. But it's really good to know that denial is based in fear and in panic. So when someone is in denial, and you know that, and you see that, try to put yourself in their shoes, try to empathize, try to have compassion, and know that it comes from fear. I know that I went to a workshop called the Tao of Montessori, and anybody that takes the concept of the common good or love or the philo seriously is a humanist. They're non-sectarian. It includes all beings and all of life. And that's what we call cosmic consciousness. In the current neuroscience, the road is unpack the fear and where it comes from with compassion. We need to do it in our inner life, visualizing it, working it out, building a foundation of trust. Use that active imagination. It's dreams, not desperation, that create working environments. Relaxation, play, and laughter. Storytelling is good for relaxation. Research on positive attitudes tell us that even smokers can extend their life by 10 years. They live 10 years longer than people who don't smoke and are negative. That should annoy some people. Well, can you picture that? So visualizing the world we want to live in and living the world you want to live in, living that world, then you're not, that's not denial. Then we'll see growth and change take place. But the denial that we're seeing today everywhere is so reminiscent of all fascist regimes that it can be terrifying. You can't let it get us down. It's important. Well, now let's talk about some recommended reading. And once again, if you'd like to call in, I'm just so happy to take your calls. I want to recommend to you The Folk Tales of the Amur, which is Russian native peoples, an excellent book. And then Dallaire's Greek Myths and his Norse Myths. And there are any number of great Chinese mythology books with excellent illustrations. Now, especially in Chinese mythology, Monkey King is fantastic. And then from the Japanese, there's Brave Warrior, sometimes called Okuni. Then from Native America, Arrow to the Sun, How the First Rainbow Was Made. And then there are compilations beautifully illustrated of Native American mythology. Anunnaki the Spider from Africa. Isis and Osiris, Egyptian mythology is rich. And of course, and The Magic Tree, A Myth from the Congo. Seven Arrows and Jumping Mouse. All of these are wonderful, wonderful books. I can't express to you how much and how important mythology is, because you see the roots of all of these people, and they're all really telling the story, the same stories. And all of these are about the psychology of humanity, and that's why they're so important, and they're told in symbolic form. Any stories about heroes, both male and female, quests, and rites of passage. That's why I mentioned Seven Arrows and Jumping Mouse. Quests and rites of passage are very important, and they address the loss of community in our pseudo-sophisticated society. So anything that we can do to help children recapture the idea of rites of passage and quest is very important. The Dark is Rising series by Susan Cooper was out long before Harry Potter, and is so supreme if you can get your hands on those books. And my favorite favorite books right now, I have many though, but The Golden Compass, The Amber Spyglass, and The Subtle Knife are just fantastic books, and I just can't recommend them highly enough. Now, there's Wise Child and Juniper, and I cannot remember the author's name, but those are also fabulous books. I highly recommend them, especially for girls, Wise Child and Juniper. The Wind in the Willows is an old classic and still great. There's a wonderful one about feelings called Happy, Sad, Silly, Mad. And Hailstones and Halibut Bones, what a wonderful book about colors, and it's a poetry. I heard someone speak about it here on KZYX and Z. I can't remember the program. It might have been Women's Voices, and I was in here. Fantastic books. It's a fantastic book. The Reward Worth Having, a wonderful book. And then the Dr. Seuss. All of his are so wonderful, but The Lorax, The Butter Battle Book, and The Cat in the Hat, you can't go wrong with those. The Hobbit is wonderful. And, of course, the whole Tolkien is wonderful for especially older children. There's a lot of description in it. Ursula K. Le Guin, her short stories, Those Who Walk Away from Omelas, has to be one of my very favorites and is a wonderful story to share with children and talk about. It's very fitting for right now, I would say. Ursula K. Le Guin is a genius. As an author, she's just outstanding. And then for the older children, too, Alice Walker, anything by Alice Walker. And I really think the poetry went into music from 1950s on. So we did a lot of Bob Dylan, Stevie Wonder, Sting, and, of course, what I'm sharing with you tonight, Chris Williamson and Jim Hansen. I do want to mention Langle's books, A Wrinkle in Time, The Wind in the Door, and A Swiftly Tilting Planet. They're also very wonderful. And science fiction fantasy of every kind is just so appealing and so meaningful to children. So those are some of my recommendations when it comes to books. William Crane, who was author of Reclaiming Childhood and was my first guest, also wrote Theories of Development. When he called me to confirm the interview, he congratulated me on getting the show, A Focus on Education Today, that he and his colleagues in human development, as well as pediatricians and psychologists and other advocates for childhood, had formed a collaboration, the Alliance for Childhood, and that he had just managed to get a show with A Focus on Education in New York. He said they had a very difficult time getting any press on the matter. That is how critical it is. Taking the Nature Cure in the late 90s, my students and I did a rewrite presentation of Scrooge. It took place in the future on an outpost on Mars where a new disease had infected the humans. The cure had accidentally been found. It was a trip to the home planet Earth. Somehow contact with the planet for an extended period of time cured the disease. Our tiny Tim had the disease in our story and couldn't afford the trip back, and you probably know the story. His dad was working for a creepy miser. I couldn't help but think of this play with my students when I heard Richard Louv's address at the Shared Visions Conference. I heard from many of you after that show, and you can all look forward to the Education Now show on December 20th when Cheryl, Cindy Charles of the Children's Nature Network, who is president of the Children's Nature Network, joins me for news from the Children's Nature Network, which is something that she and Richard started. I know I'm excited about it. There'll be a special edition of Education Now on Thursday, November 20th, when Professor Margot Porter, Doctor of Education, who teaches in the Sonoma State Credentialing Program and is a teacher of a third-grade classroom in the Ukiah Public Elementary Schools, will be my guest. That's a special edition on the 29th. Somebody's trying to call, so let's take that call. Hello, you're on the air. Hello.
Any way to get a reiteration of your book list, whether in print or some maybe on the website or something? It was way too fast to write down, and I wanted them all.
Oh, how wonderful. Well, you know that I post all of my shows on my website.
Excellent.
www.pacificsites, pacificsites.com/TildaHermes. Now, if that's too much for you, if you would just Google Melville Montessori School, it will come up.
Excellent.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Well, let's go on. So that's a special edition of Education Now on Thursday, November 29th, when Professor Margot Porter, Doctor of Education, who teaches in the Sonoma State Credentialing Program and teaches a third-grade classroom here in the Ukiah Public Elementary Schools, will be my guest. And I know many teachers who are very excited that she's going to be on the show. And then, of course, Cheryl Charles on December 20th. Now, we have some more time, and I wanted to, first of all, I want to give you this little promo from the students at Tree of Life School. They made this little promo for you. Here we go.
Friday night, November 16th, the secondary class of Tree of Life is hosting a romantic pasta dinner fundraiser. The first seating is at 6 o'clock, and the second at 7:15. There's childcare too. Just buy a kid's meal ticket for a small fee. You can buy tickets at Mendocino Book Company or Tree of Life School at 241 Ford Road in Ukiah. Tickets will also be available at door, but seating is limited. For more information, call Tree of Life School at 462-0913. A night alone with your date? No worries. No distractions. A spaghetti-flavored slice of heaven.
Well, there they were. And I don't know if it was just too fast. So I'm going to do it for you again. And I'm going to share some other promos with you, too. But first, I want to give you some websites. If you want to check out Cheryl Charles before the show on the 20th of December, it's www.cnaturenet.org. And then I always want to mention the AllianceForChildhood.org. And then I gave you mypacificsites.com/TildaHermes or Google Melville Montessori School, and you can get all the shows on Education Now. And if you want to email me personally, it's hermes@pacific.net. I want to thank all of the staff, and of course, I want to thank you all for your participation during the Pledge Drive show. It's a crucial time for free media in our America. Democracy cannot breathe in this fascist environment, and we need this radio station badly. Someone else is calling. Let's take that call. Hello, you're on the air.
Yes, I called earlier and spoke with you.
Yes.
I just wanted to say how important it was for you to be bringing forth these issues across the board. And I think
we're having a hard time hearing you.
Oh, I might not be. I'm on a cell phone, so I just want to say thank you, and you're doing a great show.
Thank you so much for calling in, and thanks for all the work you're doing with kids.
Thank you.
Bye now. That was a tenured teacher. who had called earlier to tell me how right on I was about the testing. So I'm going to give this to you one more time. The secondary class of Tree of Life Montessori Charter School is hosting a romantic pasta dinner to raise money for their end-of-the-year field trip. Tickets available at Mendocino Book Company and Tree of Life School. For more information, contact Anthony or Rhonda at 462-0913. Well, it's just about time for W. Dan and the Treehouse. Can you picture that? I was going to play Make Me Laugh before he came on, but I don't really think there is time for that. I do want to thank the producers of Education Now, the Hermeneutic Institute for Holistic Health and Education, and I want to thank the staff here at KZYX&Z for all their wonderful support, and I want to thank all of you for being members. Thank you now, and we're going to go out with First Earth and Sky. But first of all, I'm going to tell you that this is KZYX 90.7 FM Philo, KZYZ 91.5 FM Willits and Ukiah, 88.1 FM Fort Bragg, and streaming live on the web at kzyx.org, Mendocino County Public Broadcasting, listener-supported community radio. And I'm going to talk to you while I get up Earth and Sky. Am I going a little bit early, W. Dan?
Play that song you wanted to play.
Play that song?
Play that funky music, White Woman.
Play that funky music, White Woman. Okay, well, let's see if I can here. Let's eject that. Make Me Laugh. Number 5. I hope that you're all being able to bear with W. Dan and I while we do this.
Star. He put his hand on the well, just in case it was of the wishing kind. Closed his eyes and wished very hard. A wish as big as the universe.
And Sky.
I'm Joel Block. According to cognitive neuroscientist Marianne Wolfe of Tufts University, what you read literally changes the structure of your brain. Wolfe's the author of a book called Proust and the Squid, The Story and Science of the Reading Brain. She spoke with Earth and Sky's Jorge Salazar.
Right, Joel, and she said we humans weren't born to read. By that, she means that reading proficiency isn't handed down from generation to generation. The act of reading is an invention that changed the very organization of the human brain.
What the brain is doing is learning how to put together the networks that our brain already has for vision, for language, for thinking, for feeling, for remembering, and making a whole new circuit out of all those existing parts.
Wolf said she got